Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here, and today we're talking about a really, really interesting analyst note that has a lot of details from a conversation with Tesla's investor relations team, including an update on the timeline for Tesla's next generation lower price vehicle, often referred to as the Model 2, won't be called that, but we've got some details on that and a lot of other interesting things from that conversation. We've also got a couple updates on electric vehicle tax credits, Tesla's solar referral program, news on Berlin, India, and a couple other things as well. Strong day for the market today, Tesla finishing up 1.5% to $755.83, while the NASDAQ was up 0.8%. All right, so we got to start off with this analyst update. This is from UBS. They have a neutral rating, $725 price target on the stock, but that is not what we care about today. They had a conversation with Martin, Tesla's head of investor relations, and from that conversation, they came away with seven key takeaways, all of which I think are very interesting. First point here, most of the recent price increases were not yet visible in the Q2 numbers. So, cat is out of the bag on our earnings preview episode later on. I've been talking a lot about how excited I am to see the Q3 numbers, and this is a big part of that. The Q2 numbers were phenomenal. They exceeded every expectation that I saw from anybody, but due to lag in delivery from order, the price increases that we consistently saw from Tesla during that portion of the year had not yet even come into play. So on the Model 3 and the Model Y combined, the average price increase was nearly $2,000, and that includes the average from the Performance Model Y and the Performance Model 3, which didn't increase at all. So when you actually factor in mix, because those lower trim vehicles are obviously going to be selling more units, the average selling price probably increased by more than that amount in the US. Just to make things simple, let's say that's 100,000 units, $2,000 more per unit. That's an additional $200 million in gross profit that should pretty much fall straight into operating income. So obviously oversimplified, but we'll be talking more about that when we do the earnings preview later on. The other tidbit that UBS shares under that point is that they say that Martin also confirmed that Tesla is fully sold out for the remainder of 2021. As we have talked about with the wait times and the design studio, that shouldn't be too surprising, but it is, I think, an oversimplification, probably not exactly what was said. If you look at the design studio, the Performance Model Y, for example, lists November delivery estimates. Same thing with the Performance Model 3, and then wait times in China for the Model 3 are 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 10 weeks on some versions of the Model Y. So they're not completely sold out for 2021 on all trims, but the most popular versions do seem to be. Point two here, Tesla wants to hire software rock stars, doesn't need a big team. Says that this was the purpose of AI Day and that Tesla is a much more attractive employer for these rock stars than any of the legacy OEMs will ever be. I think we can all agree on that one. So point three, Tesla can handle chip situation better than others. Quote, Tesla doesn't buy black box chips. It codes the software for every ECU internally, which is why Tesla can switch between chip suppliers fast. Others don't have this flexibility. End quote. I think this is really good to re-emphasize. Tesla did talk about this in their Q1 earnings report, so not necessarily news here, but this does give Tesla a comparative advantage alongside, I believe, their original growth plans, because remember, Tesla would have built those supply chain plans based on Giga Berlin and Giga Texas actually starting production earlier than they are now. Effectively, that means that Tesla would have planned for an oversupply, which could potentially make a shortage less impactful. But obviously, you still have to have all the parts. So even if one part is short, well, you can maybe work around it, but could still have an impact even if the other parts are in an oversupplied situation. Point four, China is a very profitable export hub. Quote, made in China cars sold in the Western world are the most profitable products for Tesla. True, China domestic delivery numbers will become visible when September is over, i.e. the high season for new car purchases in China begins. He is not at all worried about China domestic demand, end quote. So while I think by now it is clear that China demand did soften earlier this year, it does seem to be returning to some extent. I think we're going to see great numbers for September, and this does confirm the theory that we had discussed about it being more profitable for Tesla to actually ship those cars into Europe versus domestic deliveries. All right, so point five, this is the one about the, I guess, not a Model 2, we'll call it. Quote, the budget model will come once in-house cell production is fully up and running. This will be the case in 2023, according to Martin. Before, Tesla wouldn't have enough batteries at the right cost level to build such an entry-level car, end quote. So I really hope that this is not surprising to any Tesla Daily listeners, despite a lot of the clickbait out there that we've seen from various media channels or YouTube channels or whatever about that vehicle coming in 2022. It's not going to be the case. It's going to take a longer time than that. And that's completely okay. Tesla's product pipeline is not hurting for this vehicle to launch. They still have plenty of room to go on the products that they've already unveiled. So 2023, even the back half of 2023, I think would be excellent if Tesla can hit that. It's also probably just worth highlighting again the sentence structure here. So it says the budget model will come once in-house cell production is fully up and running, and Martin says that will be the case in 2023. So any timeline there is kind of a stitching together of two comments. First, battery production, that being ramped up in 2023, and they can't do the Model 2 or whatever it's called before that point. So perhaps best to think of it like a rocket launch of a not earlier than timeline. Then the other concern with this might be, okay, battery's not now until 2023. I'm not reading too much into that because I think this would imply that they would need to be at very high volume production, which Elon has said as recently as a few months ago might take 12 to 18 months. So I don't think there's anything too new there. I think the 4680 ramp, it's going to feel like super slow, kind of painful. I think it's probably already felt like that to some extent. But as Elon would point out, that is the early stage of the S-curve. Once it hits, once it starts really going, it's going to go fast. Point five here then, opening up European supercharger network is a revenue opportunity. Quote, Tesla has realized that utilization rates of superchargers in Europe are very low, and therefore it makes financial sense to open up the network to other cars. He thinks the revenue opportunity is more relevant than losing the, quote, exclusivity of supercharging, end quote. We've talked about the pros and cons of that before, so I don't think we need to spend a ton of time on that, but interesting to hear that perspective. And then point seven here, AI and vision is the only way forward for FSD. Quote, he thinks alternative sensor fusion approaches don't increase reliability because of too many, quote unquote, false positives. He also believes that AI is a long-term competitive edge that won't get commoditized. He was mentioning Google search as an example of highly valuable proprietary AI, end quote. I think that last point, probably the most interesting part of that to me, because we've heard Elon say that he does think that eventually everyone will have autonomy, everyone will have EVs, but it has been a while since we've heard Elon say that explicitly, so maybe as they get further down this rabbit hole, maybe the internal perspective from Tesla on that could be changing a little bit. So overall, a lot of good updates there. Let's move on. We've got a couple of updates here on electric vehicle tax credits. First, at the federal level, which of course we talked about the most recent proposal of on Monday. Today we have an update from Riley Began here, a correspondent for the Detroit News, who reports that Democratic Representative Dan Kildee of Michigan told reporters today that it is a quote-unquote possibility that they will change the union provision of that proposed tax credit if there's another way to reward companies with very high labor standards. All right, so a couple of thoughts here. First, I'm glad to see this. Second of all, this little snippet alone demonstrates how discriminatory this policy would be in nature. It acknowledges that there will be other companies that have very high labor standards that are not unionized, and yet they would be extremely heavily penalized under this policy. To me, even though I don't think this was the intent, that basically comes across as an admission that this would be a bad policy. So I hope this is just kind of a sign that we're seeing a crack in this proposal, and I think the fact that this is coming from a representative from Michigan is hopefully pretty telling and may give us a really good indicator of where things are heading, because you would think that representative from Michigan, where Detroit is, would be kind of the last person to acknowledge that, oh, there is actually a world outside of the UAW. So I am glad to see these comments. We'll see if it leads to any adjustments, but this is just one of the problems. I think maybe even the larger problem is the incentivization of plug-in hybrids, and I haven't seen any commentary on that. Obviously, I had that tweet thread about that yesterday. Thanks to those of you that are taking action on that and contacting your representatives. Many of you have shared that with me, so it's nice to see. All right, the other EV tax credit that we have, this is a state-level update, and this was from Illinois. Today, they signed into law a bill that would grant a $4,000 electric vehicle credit in the state. Illinois actually had this level of credit before. They phased it out back in, I think, 2015, but it looks like now it is back. So exciting to see that. Unfortunately, I haven't yet been able to track down the specific terms, so I'm not sure what, if any, restrictions may be on that credit. But at the state level, that is certainly going to be a difference maker in terms of that credit size. Next up, we've got an update on Tesla's referral program, specifically on Tesla's solar panels and solar roof. This weekend, they changed the structure there, and they've actually increased the referral and referrer awards to now both be $500 a piece for both the referred customer and the referrer. That is up from $100 for the customer before and $400 for the referrer. So Tesla effectively doubling how much they're paying here per referral, most of that going to the customer, $100 increase then to the referrer. On the referrer side, then Tesla is still offering one Powerwall per referrer if they hit 10 or more. I'm not quite there yet, so shameless plug, if this puts you over the top for getting solar, my referral link is down in the description. Next up is a quick report from Tasmanian on Giga Berlin, which looks to be in line for some state-level credits as well as the federal credits for the battery factory there at Giga Berlin. The state looks to have approved a funding amount for construction of that factory for 120 million euros. That would be on top of federal funding, which we have discussed before, of about $1.1 billion, which isn't quite approved yet, but seems to be basically at that stage. In a similar vein, we have news out of India today that they have approved a $3.5 billion incentive plan to encourage auto companies to invest in EVs and fuel cell vehicles and, strangely enough, drone manufacturing. Details are a little bit sparse in this Reuters report on exactly what the requirements might be to be eligible for some of this incentive, but it looks to be entirely focused on domestic production there. So carmakers would need to invest 20 billion rupees, which is about $272 million, over a five-year period. Obviously, if Tesla were to enter India, that would be no problem. And then they must grow sales at 10% per year. Incentives would then range from 8% to 18% of the sales value for the vehicles or components for component manufacturers. So good to see that for the EV market there in India. Doesn't seem to, at this point, have any effect on imported vehicles. Obviously, Tesla has been pushing for some updates to those policies. Current import taxes are extremely prohibitive to getting a business established, which obviously would be somewhat of a prerequisite of investing more in India. So I'm not sure of any status on that. I think my best guess would be that those conversations are ongoing, but we'll see. All right, last couple of items then. We do have a couple of EPA range confirmations here. So first up, we have the Volkswagen ID.4 all-wheel drive version that just got its EPA range rating of 249 miles for the all-wheel drive Pro and 240 miles for the all-wheel drive Pro S. And kind of the only reason I really want to talk about this is because the battery size on those vehicles is 82 kilowatt hours. So same ballpark as the Model Y, but quite a bit less range. The other EPA update is on the Lucid Air, which AutoWeek has reported did receive an official rating from the EPA for a 520 mile range. That article from AutoWeek was deleted. Looks like somebody made an embargo mistake there, posting a little bit too soon. So great number there for Lucid, but obviously now they've got to produce it. All right, lastly then here, just want to wish good luck to SpaceX and their Inspiration 4 mission, everyone involved in that. By the time many of you listen, it's probably already happened, but I think we'll get it out a little bit before that launch happens, so good luck there. And if you do catch this episode before 8.02 p.m. Eastern time today, that is when the launch window opens up. That will wrap it up for today, though, so as always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast, and I'll see you tomorrow for the Thursday, September 16th episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.